Your home for sports on the radio. We are 95.3 The Score. And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
When I win.
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tank and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score. And now, the Wednesday special edition of Crunch Time with Steve Tannen and USA Today's George Schroeder. Brought to you by Bi-Mart, just right for the Northwest. It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Hey, Nick, how you doing? It's like it might be me and you today. Maybe a dog named Boo. Who knows? Welcome-ish to Crunch Time and Sports Talk. If you're hearing us on the stream, let us know. Text us, 321-0824. Seems like we're not on regular radio. And it's been kind of in and out of love all day. I'm doing a little bit of a bum dance because kind of prepare to do a radio show. I know that sounds crazy. Radio waves!
Always remember there's people that are listening on the stream and people that listen to our podcasts. And we have to also remember that we're doing the show for them.
I choose not to believe that. I think you're making it up just to make me feel better about things. While I appreciate the effort, I'm going to ring that up as a no sale. After watching the Oregon men beat Memphis last night, I hung in a little bit for SportsCenter because, lo and behold, Oregon men's football coach Mario Cristobal was on. And that was pretty fun. Interesting night in college basketball. The Kentucky upset at the hands of the Purple Aces of Evansville. Kind of historic. Today they'll give out a couple of MLB awards. Cy Young, Denton True Young, named after Cyclone Young. Scherzer for the National League. Cole for the American League? Is it going to be Verlander or Cole? I think probably go with Cole. The whole saga of the Houston Astros stealing signs, and now that everybody's got to see the video, it's like, yeah, we're not going to ask if you cheated. It's how damaging it was. And one of the more telling statistics from last postseason, this most recent postseason, I think they said 30 or 31% of at-bats ended in a homer or a strikeout. Which means if you know a pitch is coming that you won't swing at, and worse, if you swing at, you won't hit. A breaking pitch, a standard curve or some kind of a slider that's out of the strike zone and its main goal is to get you to chase. Man, that's a pretty big advantage to not swing at it, especially if it's like a 1-0 count and now it's 2-0, or when it was 1-1, it was 2-1, or it was 2-1, it was 3-1. And all you had to do was bang really loud on a garbage can. So it went, it's the ultimate combination of incredible high tech and the ability to have the camera angle, but relay in like one of the most primitive manners ever. We mentioned yesterday the dude from the Cardinals won the NL Manager of the Year, Rocco Baldelli of the Twins, the American League Manager of the Year, Mike Schilt. The interesting thing was he got less first place votes than Craig Counsell of the Brewers. He got 10, Counsell got 13, but he was second on 14 ballots, 6 for Counsell. So he appeared on 27 ballots, Counsell 24. Brian Snitker, who I think lost the award because people were uncomfortable with his name. The dude from St. Louis won the award like 5 days after he learned his mom died. And he was telling some pretty cool stories about his mom would take him to see the Charlotte O's, then the AA affiliate of the Baltimore Orioles. Are you telling me what you think we're back on the air?
I'm hearing us back.
We're back, baby! We're back! We're efforting George Schroeder in a couple minutes. So if you've been flipping around, be like, they're not on, they're not on, they're not on. I hope you hear me right now saying, well, now we are on, now we are on, now we are on. We'll get Schroeder on the air from Norman, Oklahoma. He was in Tuscaloosa. He'll be in Waco for Oklahoma Baylor this week. So we got a lot to talk with George about. It's the eve of another full weekend of NFL football. Thursday nighter, Steelers Bruins. God, I'm going to be rooting hard for Pittsburgh in that one. They're right there, actually, when it comes to the playoff picture. They're above 500. Le Cleveland's Nespa at 3-6. I want to talk about this Chase Young deal of Ohio State. So he took a loan, paid it back, by the way. And he's getting a 2-game suspension. Ohio State had to go through the process and make a formal request for immediate reinstatement. I believe the phrase would be they asked it to be expedited. And by the way, suddenly the NCAA is reviewing information in a prompt and efficient way and rendering a decision. They still haven't ruled on Reggie Bush, and he last played in 2005. I guess what I read in the paper. So he accepted a loan last year from somebody he described as a family friend, paid it in full. But even though he repaid it, the bottom line is it's considered an extra benefit because he didn't know the guy until he got recruited to Ohio State. So that is the NCAA in all its glory. Well, he didn't know him, and he's a friend, but he didn't know him in high school, but he did meet him after he started college. So even though he took the loan, it's just it's mayhem. All right, we're going to lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You could also hit us up via the text line, 321-0824. It's that time on a Wednesday. Get our view from the middle. He was on hand for that crazy shootout with LSU-Bama. College football regular season ends in 17 days, and he'll be at a game all Oregon fans need to follow, Oklahoma at Baylor. If you're looking for his work, it's the red section of USA Today. Online, it's at usatoday.com. On Twitter, it's at George Schroeder. George, happy Wednesday to you. How's it going?
I am good. How are you?
Great. LSU, Alabama, and last week leading up, we talked about, you know, historically, you got these two legendary programs, and you think about power football and defense, and now these offenses who combined for 50 first downs, 800 passing yards, they had a 200-yard receiver, just beyond the magnitude of the game and what it means nationally. I mean, you're there in person. I mean, how entertaining was that to see firsthand?
Well, very entertaining and also surreal. I was not at the game in 2011. I was still at the register guard at that time. But I recall watching it thinking to myself, yeah, 9-6. okay, great. You can sell me on it's great defensive football or whatever, but I'm watching this Oklahoma State team light people up on that year. If you recall, they had Brandon Weeden.
Yep.
They were just really, really good. And I want to tell you, what we saw Saturday night is not only the evolution of the programs, Alabama and more recently LSU, to space-age football, it's also, in my mind, and I only have one, it's not very big, so not my mind, but it's a validation of all of those other styles, of all those other teams that have played that fast-paced, high-powered, score a ton of football through the years that was mocked. You know, it happens out in the Pac-12, it's happened in the Big 12, and suddenly when the two SEC powers play it, it's great, great football. So there was also that going on, too. I will tell you this, it makes me think, and you didn't ask this, it makes me think that 2011 Oklahoma State team, I already thought this, would have lit either of those teams up.
Yeah, that was the year where they were the third out before there was a playoff, and it was just two for the BCS, and we got the rematch.
However, that said, the fact that we had that rematch is the unquestioned biggest catalyst in the fact that we now have a playoff, which is so much better than the old BCS system, regardless of whether or not you want it to be 8 or 9. There's not much argument that what we've got now is way better than what we have.
You know, one of the conversations we've had centered on, you can pick Leonard Fournette or Geno Smith. I think we've referred to them as the October Heisman winners. Well, this game was November. Joe Burrow was incredible, and all they've got left are Ole Miss, Arkansas, Texas A&M, two at home. Safe to say he's not only the clear front runner, but has a great chance of not being lumped in with those guys who had it to win and didn't finish the deal.
Yeah, no question. Now, I will say this. A year ago at this time, we thought Tua Tagovailoa was going to be the guy. We really did. We thought he was far and away the guy, and Kyler Murray sort of came up on the outside at the end. But I don't think that there's that guy out there. On the one hand, I think Burrow's case is much more, he's much more a front runner than Tua was even last year. Although, if you think back to this time last November, he was a pretty substantial front runner. You felt like he'd probably be the prohibitive favorite. But I don't see anybody like a Kyler Murray coming up on the outside, do you?
No, so I don't.
I mean, Tua would be the guy, and that got settled in a lot of voters' minds, fairly or not, and I think probably fairly. Last Saturday night, Tua would be the guy who could come up from the outside. I don't see Justin Fields doing it. I don't see Jalen Hurts doing it. I don't see Justin Herbert garnering some significant amount of support down the stretch to pull it off to catch up with Joe Burrow. So while we ought to be a little cautious, I do think it's probably pretty close to sewn up.
Yeah, I agree. And, early in the year, Jonathan Taylor of Wisconsin was in the conversation. I don't think so much anymore.
Well, how about if you're going to have a running back, what about the kid from Oklahoma State, Chuba Hubbard, who has, 500 more yards than Jonathan Taylor this year and is just lighting people up? I don't know.
But yeah. No, we've talked about him.
It's going to be Joe Burrow unless something goofy happens.
Yeah, statistically, he seems to be next level. I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Arkansas, your home state where your career began, a program you and your family followed. Chad Morris out after 22 games. Never even got an SEC win, only beat two FBS programs. And, man, you get punished at home by Western Kentucky. How much of a disaster has been falling these Razorbacks?
Man, did you have to read the litany of problems? Did you really have to do that?
I'm sorry. I try to be accurate.
That was my childhood favorite team, and that program. My friends and family still live and die with the Razorbacks. There's no question. It is a dumpster fire, basically. And I will say two things. One, Chad Morris is not only a good coach, I think he's a good man, too. And so you hate that it's not working out. But it was not working out. And I don't think it was going to get much better in year three. And as important, a little bit like when we talked about Florida State, at a certain point the fans vote by not showing up. And I don't think that was going to change, not necessarily just the last couple of games this year, but There wasn't going to be much excitement going into year three, and you're going to have season ticket renewal problems and all sorts of things. And at some point, it becomes a do we have to make this change situation? And they did. And the one thing you didn't mention was they didn't just lose to a middling Conference USA team in Western Kentucky, Sun Belt team, right? Excuse me. Whichever it is, I lose my train of thought. But they didn't just lose to a middling Group of Five team in Western Kentucky. They lost to a quarterback named Ty Story, who was a graduate transfer for Western Kentucky from Arkansas. When after last season, they basically told him, we're bringing in a couple of quarterbacks through the grad transfer portal who'll be grad transfers. And so never mind that you're a schoolboy legend in the state of Arkansas, Ty. Never mind that you've played here. We're going to bring in people on top of you. So he goes to Western Kentucky, and then he leads a rout of his home team on what should have been his senior day.
Wow, I did not know that angle to the story. That insult to injury column, welcome. Talking with George Schroeder of USA Today. So the latest playoff rankings, you know, much was made of number four. Was no surprise, LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, unbeaten, top three. But are we secure, or are you of the opinion, if Baylor or be it Ohio State or Minnesota wins out, along with Clemson, along with LSU, in essence, what I'm saying, if there are four unbeaten Power 5 league champs, it doesn't matter what Alabama or Oregon or Georgia do, those are going to be our four?
Yes. I am completely... Yes, and I was trying to go through it to make sure there was still that possibility, but there is. There's an unbeaten team in the other four Power 5 leagues, right? There's just not one yet anymore in the Pac-12. You
right.
have the 2-1-loss teams. So, yes, I'm securing that. If Minnesota or Ohio State and LSU and Clemson are in, but if Minnesota was instead the team, well, they would have beaten Ohio State. They would have beaten Penn State. They would have beaten Iowa. They're going to have a resume. If it's Baylor out of the Big 12, and keep in mind, I don't think either of those two teams is going to do it. But if it is, they will have beaten Oklahoma probably twice. I'd be stunned if they didn't beat them twice, because I think Oklahoma would still get in the Big 12 title game. They would have beaten Oklahoma State and Kansas on the road and manhandled both of them. Both of them are currently top 25 teams. They would have beaten a Texas team that's at least right now a top 25 team. So they would have a ton of wins. But regardless of what you want to talk about, the biggest piece of the resume is that they'd be 13-0. And I know I've said this on the air here before, but the day that a 13-0 Power 5 conference champion does not get into the playoff is the day that there are five of those. And then
exactly.
By definition, somebody gets left out.
No, I agree.
But there won't be five. They're going to be, in your scenario, which is crazy unlikely, there'd be four, and they'd get in, and yes, they'd be in ahead of the Pac-12 champ in that scenario.
I agree. PJ Fleck, speaking of Minnesota, so had that big year at Western Michigan, then goes and rose all the way to Minnesota. From 5-7, now he's 9-0, but had lacked that wow win, but beating Penn State, I mean, they intercepted three passes. Tanner Morgan, their quarterback, I mean, he tore the Nittany Lions up. So while they loom eighth in the playoff rankings, just that was a pretty high-profile move because Fleck, you know, kind of garnered a lot of attention because of his personality. How impressive should we be with this season and where he's taken this program already?
I would say really impressed. I mean, look, I don't think PJ Fleck's shtick is for everybody, okay?
Right.
But I will tell you this, it's certainly not for people who are adults in the working world, right? It's tuned, and by his shtick, I mean basically everything he said. And I mean... And I don't mean that there's not substance behind it, but it's sort of this corporate culture speak run amok, basically, right? It's tuned to 17 to 22-year-olds, and they buy it, and it's working. And I also think this. I think he believes it. I was talking with Matt Rhule, the Baylor coach, yesterday in Waco, and he was talking about how much he's different than P.J. Fleck, but how much he respects the fact that P.J. believes in what he's doing, and it's clear that he believes in his team, and that his team believes in what he's doing, and his team believes in him. And now they believe in themselves. And I think that's something important to know. I also think this. I think that team has gotten better as the season went along. The Penn State game was a revelation to most of us, but it wasn't the first time they played well. We act like every game was an escape or a struggle, like against South Dakota State or something. They've been getting better and better as the season's gone along. Do they look like a playoff contender to me? They still don't, but they did beat Penn State, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, they had set a program record by winning four straight conference games, I think I read, by more than 20 points. They hadn't done that since, like, the 30s. And, you know, Maryland, Rutgers, teams like that, but still, it stood out. Couple of final thoughts for George Schroeder. So you'll be at Baylor in Oklahoma, probably the biggest game for the Bears in most of our lifetime. I know they were 9-0 in 2013, lost to Oklahoma State. But again, I mentioned PJ Fleck, but to acknowledge Matt Rhule, I mean, we know the situation he walked into, and they won seven games last year. I mean, this is pretty remarkable work as well.
Well, it is. You need to go back one more year too. So in his first year, 2017, they went 1-11.
Right.
And I think they were 0-8 or 0-9 or whatever at one point. I may be wrong with that, but it feels like they lost a bunch to start. So by the way, that includes losing to Texas, San Antonio, and Liberty. But by the end of that year, they took a playoff Oklahoma team to the wire. They took a West Virginia team that was pretty darn good to the wire. And you could see the signs that they were getting better. They just weren't winning games. I think they only beat Kansas. So last year they win their final regular season game to get to six wins, and then they beat Vanderbilt in a bowl game shootout. And they're 7-6, and you're like, well, that's nice. But nobody saw 9-0 coming. And I would say that includes them. But by the way, that 9-0 is now 11 in a row if you count those last two games of last year. And they are, even more so than Minnesota, I would say their 9-0 is sort of a weird 9-0, because they could be 5-4. Five of their last seven wins have come by one possession. Three of them came on the last play of the game. If you count, there was a game-winning field goal, and then there were a couple of overtime games. And so it's an amazing run, and I don't know that – I mean, look, they could finish 9-3, right? But why would you say they can't finish 12-0, the regular season 12-0 at this point?
Well, after watching how they somehow pulled, because I watched the whole TCU game, and that in essence, the regulation game was Alabama-LSU of 2011, and then they started scoring in the Kansas plan. It was a crazy game.
No, it really was. You're not wrong. And look, if you look at them on paper, they don't stack up against Oklahoma. And I'm talking about the Oklahoma team that you know has sort of had weird situations happen and not played as well the last two games out. Obviously, they lost at K-State in that game, and then they were up 42-21 on Iowa State and let Iowa State come all the way back and have a two-point try to win it in the final second. I'm talking about that Oklahoma State team. I mean, Oklahoma team, not the Oklahoma team that many of us thought was potentially a top-four team at one point, maybe still is. I'm saying the team, Oklahoma team with flaws, ought to go into Waco and beat this Baylor team. But there's something about this Baylor team, and I think we overlook them at our own peril.
No, I agree. They're like the Baylor team is like the old Leonard Nimoy show. They're always in search of ways to find wins, and they keep getting them. George, that seems like you're going to be at a pretty fun game again at McLean Stadium, Oklahoma at Baylor. Again, on USA Today, well, in USA Today, the red section, usatoday.com online, at George Schroeder on Twitter. George, fun stuff. We're really getting into crunch time, and I always look forward to what next week might bring.
Yeah, well, thanks. I do, too. And this time of year is a lot of fun. You know, it's amazing we got through an entire segment and didn't talk about Oregon. But the Ducks are in prime shape for the playoff if they can just win out.
I agree.
And obviously, that's the biggest part, if they can just win out.
Well,
but if they do, I think they're in.
I think they have a really good chance of winning into the Pac-12 playoff game. I do not want to sell short Utah with that defense.
Utah's terrific.
Yeah.
Utah's terrific. The other piece of this, too, is people are casting the Big 12 champion into the outer darkness on this because Oklahoma's ranked 10th and Baylor's ranked 13th. Never mind Baylor. We talked about that a minute ago. If that Oklahoma team beats Baylor this week and then beats Oklahoma State, which is also ranked, then it would also probably beat Baylor or Texas or K-State again in the conference title game, one of those three. It's going to end up with 3 weeks out of four wins over ranked teams, and it won't be a situation where they'll have a top-10 matchup, which is what everybody hopes for out of the Pac-12 title game.
Yep.
But it would be a situation where the latter third of the season was really strong. So you can't ignore that either. But if the calculus comes down to Oregon beats Utah and is 12-1, and the comparison is to 11-1 Alabama, I really feel pretty confident the Ducks are going to be getting in. And so the question would probably be, is it Pac-12 champ or Big 12 champ? Not is it Alabama? And I think that's great news for college football fans.
And for people who don't want Alabama in. Good.
Good. That's what I just said. It's great news for college football
fans. Hey, thanks a lot, George. Have a good one. We'll talk next Wednesday.
All right, talk to you later.
All right, take it easy. So technically, are we back on, are we doing radio or streaming now? What's our job? If I went to
radio
somebody right
is
now,
streaming,
right
Steve.
Now. All right, we'll take a break.
The
we'll come back.
The future, man.
We're coming back to show you how technologically advanced this is. I have both my fingers crossed. We'll be back with an update and more Crunch Time. 95.3, The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk. Coors Light is the official sponsor of your Oregon Ducks and the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953 for your chance to get involved. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
67-64. I don't know if Coach McCarty practices fouling, but I would certainly implore it here. Maxey on the way for the tie, and it comes up short.
What a win by Evansville.
And for that man right there, what a moment for Walter McCarty.
Yeah, the college hoops last night certainly put on a show. You had that Auburn game where they almost suffered a major upset. Hit a late bucket with like 1.3 seconds to go. Oregon in the marquee matchup of the evening on ESPN. The only one involving, you know, two top 15 teams. Get the victory against Memphis. We'll talk about that. We thank George Schroeder for his Wednesday time. What did I want to bring up here? The National League Cy Young Award winner was handed out as we welcome you back to Crunch Time, 95.3 The Score. Jakob deGrom, back-to-back. That doesn't happen a lot, 11th time in history. I didn't see the voting. I would assume it's over, you know, Scherzer or Cole. Scherzer, he missed some time injured, though, and by the way, I did it.
You did.
Astros back in the National League.
I was wondering when you were going to catch yourself, but no, you absolutely. Yep, Garrett Cole is in contention for the National League Cy Young.
He had a good year. You never know. Yep. They might just decide 1 year. You know what? We're just giving out one.
Hey, you might as well, right? You know, Cy Young Award winner. You know, I mean.
Does youth have anything to do with Cy Young?
That's true. Like, you could have one Cy Young winner, and then you just come up with, like, the Sandy Koufax Award for an NL pitcher, or, like, the Pedro Martinez Award for an AL pitcher, because those are the first pitchers that came to mind when I thought of National League and American League. They probably aren't the best example. Well, Koufax might be a good example for a National League guy.
I think that it might have just been one Cy Young Award winner in the 50s until the 60s. I think Don Newcomb of the old Brooklyn Dodgers was the first Cy Young Award winner, and then they split it into leagues. I'd have to double check on that. Or maybe I could have you check on that.
I don't really want to. That sounds like a project for you. You sound like that you would be enjoyed by looking that up.
So if Scherzer ran second, I mean, this is a guy that didn't even pitch 175 innings. Remember, he had the injuries. But 243 whiffs over 172. His whip was over 1, whereas DeGrom was .97. Man, I'll tell you what, though. 6.8 hits per 9 innings. That's really good. So, Jakob DeGrom... congratulations. He's going to be the only guy who, like, well, he'll win it again next year. And it's like, he'll have his record over that time will be like 33-26. And he'll have 3 Cy Youngs. And people will be like, what the hell was happening in Major League Baseball at the end of the 2010s? Well, it was all about strikeouts and not giving up the wrong homers because everybody was giving up home runs. So,
well, that was the big controversy with, Peter Alonso not being like a unanimous NL Rookie of the Year, because so many people were like, well, yeah, the ball was juiced, hitting home runs became as easy as ever, and Soroka of the Braves was like one of the best pitchers at not giving up home runs, which, when, you know, I could probably hit a home run with the juiced ball, it's kind of a big deal when you're not giving up homers. And apparently, I haven't paid a whole bunch of attention to baseball once it ended, but apparently Twitter was ablaze with how people were really mad that Soroka got, I think, so many votes and so much consideration as Rookie of the Year.
Really? Bent out of shape over that.
Apparently.
All right. I'm just curious to see what the actual voting was. But so he's the 7th in National League history to win 2 straight Cy Youngs. So you got that going for us, which is nice. Now, of course, being me, I have to find out about the Cy Young deal and if, in fact, they used to give out just one. But we got time. And more importantly, we seem to be on the air, which is something we can't take for granted all today. We got that going for us, which is nice. So the Mets, Jakob DeGrom, the 7th to win 2 straight. By the way, 29 of 30 first place votes. Ryu of the Doyers was the only one who got another first place vote. Want to talk about a pretty impressive list? The other 6 who won back-to-back National League Cy Youngs: Sandy Koufax, Greg Maddux, Randy Johnson, Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer, and...
oh, I know him.
The Freak, Tim Lincecum. And, he had kind of a slow start. He, 9 starts into the year, he had a 4 ERA and he was 3-5. Wow. The rest of the way, he had a 1.9 ERA. And I didn't realize that he led the league in strikeouts with 255. So, there you go. Well done. And sneaky, because as far as the Mets go, you had Tom Seaver, Dwight Gooden, R.A. Dickey. Remember the knuckleballer won the Cy Young? Didn't he sign with Toronto? And all of a sudden it was like, well, that was dumb.
Was he signed by Toronto or was he traded to Toronto? Because I think it was a trade, because that's what sent Noah Syndergaard to the New York Mets.
Yeah, you may be right.
I think I am right.
You may be right.
I think
decide.
I almost know I'm right.
Yeah, so after 2012... he got traded with guys I've never heard of, except for Travis d'Arnaud and Noah Syndergaard was the deal. Then he signed with the Atlanta Braves. Now, you want to talk about the proverbial, I wouldn't call him a one-hit wonder. I mean, he did pitch with Toronto. But, I mean, this is a guy who all of a sudden won 20 games, had a 2.7 ERA, struck out 230. I mean, he's never come within a whisker of that. I mean, not even close. But anyway, Jakob DeGrom, your 2019 Cy Young winner. And in the American League, I guess, I could get back to Garrett Cole and Justin Verlander. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Hit us up on the text line, 321-0824. Try us on Twitter at 953 the score for the station. You could also hit us up at SportsTalk 953 for me and for Nick Rogers, our producer, at Rick Nodgers. I was listening to Jeff Luhnow, the general manager of the Houston Astros, who he's had to give some really unpleasant press conferences recently. I mean, after the Brandon Taubman idiocy, sleaziness, attacking women who, you know, were advocating against domestic violence and on behalf of victims, talking about thank God they got Osuna, who got suspended for half a year for violating the Major League Baseball domestic violence policy. And now, you know, it's kind of hard to say, well, we weren't cheating. Well, what's that noise? What's that video? And, you know, you get into the whole Richard Pryor. Now, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? And we were talking about historically some of the cases of sign stealing, where in the, I said Tim Kirkjian had written that story about Comiskey Park in the 1980s, where somebody took a refrigerator bulb because it was a different color white than the regular, you know, if you've ever seen an outdoor scoreboard, you got the lights and it'll tell you, you know, the one light will be like who's at bat, or if it's a football game, who's got the ball, what the score is, and everything in lights. Well, they had one light set up to a toggle switch, and they had somebody sitting in the manager's office solely focused on the camera that was watching the catcher. And depending on what the signal was, you know, one, it was an off-speed pitch, two blinks, it was a fastball, and they got caught for that. There was the Phillies and Rockies from 2010 where the Rockies accused Philly of stealing the signs from the catcher, and they were like, no, we're not. And somebody like came up to him with a photo. And it's like, see that guy in the outfield bullpen with the camera? Yeah, what uniform is he wearing? He's one of the bullpen coaches. And it's like, at a certain point, it's like, no, that's not me. That's not him. Nope. Photoshopped. It's like 2010.
That sounds like the it's a SpongeBob meme. It's from a scene in SpongeBob where Patrick and is it Manta Man? I don't know. Anyways, and it's like, is this your wallet? No, that's not my wallet. There's a picture of you that I found in this wallet that would lead me to believe that this is you in the picture of the wallet. You look like the picture. This must be your wallet. Nope, not mine. Prove it. I mean, I'm just going to keep saying no until you finally just give up.
The bottom line is, and your wallet is referred to, you know, their ID when sometimes you walk into a bar, they ask if you have proof. And it's like, you're literally saying your proof has no proof.
Yeah, prove it. I'm just going to keep saying no. Prove it. Go ahead.
All right, real quick, our KUJZ Fallcraft Brew Card is on sale now at our website, 953thescore.com. It's an awesome Christmas gift, and the Craft Brew Card is available now. And the way it works, it's a $191 value. You get it for $75. You can score 20 craft brews on draft, 10 appetizers, and we have 10 local breweries and tasting rooms generous enough to contribute. Long Timber Brewing in Monroe, Deluxe Brewing in Albany, and First National Tap House as well. So again, online to 953thescore.com, check out the Craft Brew Card or the Sweet Deal link for your Craft Brew Passport. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. It's Wednesday to wrap up Crunch Time. We pay homage to the Bell. Coming at you next, 953 The Score.
Hey, all right. Time for the Crunch Exchange. It's how we wrap up every Wednesday. during crunch time, I've come up with a prospectus. Steve then tells us if he's buying, selling, or he hits a pending because he needs a little bit more information. So let's jump right into it for today. Colin Kaepernick is going to have a workout this weekend. This is good because it's about damn time that he got a shot at being back in the NFL, even if it's just as a backup or even on the practice squad. Even after not playing in the last two seasons, he's probably still a top 40 quarterback in the NFL, which is more than good enough to be a backup. Of course, this is all coming with controversy because it wouldn't be Kaepernick in the NFL without controversy. Cap gets his workout Saturday in Atlanta, and all NFL clubs have been invited to see him do his on-field workout and a Q&A session that will follow. Except it turns out the NFL decided Tuesday morning his workout would be this Saturday, and that was that. The NFL normally has their workouts on Tuesdays, and you would think that the NFL might actually care about getting Cap back into the leagues in terms of the eyeballs that would be all glued to their TVs and being able to watch him play, but the NFL also might still be mad about the protests, and maybe in the back of their mind they're hoping that by springing this workout on Colin, he won't look good and it will kill the momentum on social media about Cap being ready and worthy of being in the NFL. That's a general conspiracy theory that I don't necessarily have time to get all the way into right now, but the important part is that Colin might be back in the NFL. He tweeted that he spent the last 3 years getting ready for NFL action, and yeah, I'm sure there will be some rust on his performance, but if he looks good at his workout, convinces the media and the teams that he's ready to play as well in the Q&A session, there might be no time like the present for Cap to actually get back to the NFL. The prospectus: Colin Kaepernick will be signed by an NFL team after his workout this weekend.
First of all, this is such a publicity stunt. It's embarrassing. And I don't think he's going to get signed anytime soon. We can get into the reasons and during another segment, but I'm selling that.
All right. The Houston Astros are not new to controversy. In the midst of their three consecutive losing seasons over 100 games, they were part of a hacking scandal where the St. Louis Cardinals had a scout hack into the Houston scouting system and get a read on some of their players. If this were a comic book origin story, that would be the night that broke the Astros from the near-lovable losers with the weird jerseys in the big stadium and turned them into the almost evil empire that now wins pennants and World Series titles and cheats rather than being cheated on. A low-key story of the 2019 postseason was pitch tipping, that being a pitcher does something with his glove, hand, body, or whatever before throwing a certain pitch so the batter can roughly know what pitch is coming at him. This isn't that big of a deal because it shows that you're being super hyper aware of each and every pitch and using your eyes to make your own decisions. What isn't okay is what the Astros were doing in 2017 and maybe longer. According to The Athletic, in a very, very deep dive in on the Houston Astros sign-stealing system they were using, they had, and as well as former Astros pitcher Mike Fiers, they had a camera in center field that was live, sent using that signal to go to a monitor in a dugout hallway, reading in on the catcher, and then some sort of sound like a banging on a trash can to let the batter know if an off-speed pitch was coming. That's cheating, and it's cheating in a way that we've never seen before in baseball. There have been the corked bats, the nail files, the steroids, the spitballs, pitchers keeping pine tar on their hat, their glove, their hair, and their pockets, etc. And while all of it is cheating, the outrage over a team cheating like this and then winning a World Series that year isn't gaining the same kind of traction that we got from players who stuck needles in their butts. The prospectus, the Astros camera cheating scandal is the worst kind of cheating.
I don't think it's the worst. I think cheating is cheating, and you're looking for an advantage when other people are trying to do it clean. So I'm going to sell that, but it doesn't mean that I'm letting them off the hook.
Let him off the hook. Another cheating adjacent story has to do with the opponent of the Oregon Ducks that they played last night, Memphis. Penny Hardaway is from Memphis. He played at Memphis and is now coaching at Memphis with the number one NBA prospect, James Wiseman. Penny, after his NBA career in the NBA and a trio of NBA teams, went back to Memphis to coach high school. That's where things got interesting. Wiseman went to school in Nashville, and he moved to Memphis to play for Penny at Penny's high school, and at the time, Penny was being a rather gracious high school coach and paid for the Wiseman family $11,000 to help them move. And according to the NCAA, Penny is then considered a booster, being a former Memphis player, even before he was the Tigers' head coach. So things get really interesting when Penny became the Memphis head coach and recruited Wiseman to play there, and the NCAA got really mad, and they ruled Wiseman ineligible. But you might have noticed if you're watching last night's Oregon-Memphis game or looked at the stat sheet and you saw that Wiseman got a double-double in the loss. But, I mean, he's obviously can't play. He's ineligible. But Penny's going to keep fighting for his players and his team, not really caring about what the NCAA can or can't do legally in this battle. It's quite the big challenge for Memphis and Penny. Not many take on the NCAA in court and end up winning. But what's it matter to Penny if things get tied up in court for the next 6 months? He could win this fight, and then they rightfully played Wiseman all season long as he grew his brand and his prospects as an NBA player. Or he loses the battle, and they wipe a season's worth of wins away, and then whatever random punishment the NCAA comes with on their punishment wheel. Kind of sounds like it's worth the risk to me. The prospectus. Memphis, Penny Hardaway, and James Wiseman win their battle with the NCAA, and he remains eligible all season.
Ooh. I think that common sense might win out here. And, you know, I keep getting this case confused with, the dude from Ohio State, Chase Young. But, yeah, the fact that they're getting to it, and I don't think there's this big outcry about what his benefits were. So I think I'm going to buy that one.
And one last one real quick. Jakob deGrom won his second Cy Young this year. He goes back-to-back as well. He had an ERA in 2018 of 1.70. It led the majors. This year, he had an ERA of 2.43. He also led the league in strikeouts with 255. Over the course of those 2 years, he was 21-17 and had an ERA plus of 189 and an ERA of 2.05. So he's really, really quite good. And the list of pitchers that we've gone over of players that win two Cy Young's award, it kind of puts them on the track to potentially get into the Hall of Fame. So Jakob deGrom, with his currently 34.9 baseball WAR after just 6 years in the majors, but two Cy Young and a Rookie of the Year award, is a Hall of Famer.
It's way too early to sell that. And by the way, we could also add late-breaking news. Justin Verlander is the American League Cy Young winner, barely edging teammate Garrett Cole. What was I going to call him?
Cole Hamels, maybe?
Maybe.
An NL pitcher?
I'm not sure where the hell I was going to go. So he now is the 20th pitcher to win multiple Cy Young. 2011 led the league in wins, innings pitched, second in ERA in strikeouts, but he did have 300 strikeouts. And, yeah, not too bad for a power pitcher in his 15th season. And now if you're going to ask a question, is he a Hall of Famer? I would say, yeah. By the way, since Houston moved to the American League, you know, you've got Dallas Keuchel won it. And, you know, Clemens won it when they were still in the National League. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back 4 o'clock hour. Sports Talk is next, 95.3 The Score.
Have you ever been to a volcano?